Can the air we breathe as a child impact who we are as an adult? Can it actually impact our personality? Today, we learn more about atmospheric lead pollution and the impact on our personality. Thanks for listening, and thanks for subscribing to Learning More. I'm Russ, and this week we are talking about atmospheric lead pollution and does it affect mature personality? Like, so if you were exposed to lead as a child, is it going to make you somewhat of a different person? Okay, I'm joined by Ted Schwaba. He's a postdoctoral researcher in psychology at the University of Texas at Austin.
Happy to be here, Russ.
Ted, so I read some of your research. This is interesting stuff. But before we get into it, let's talk about atmospheric lead pollution. Exactly what is that?
So atmospheric lead pollution is an unfortunate consequence of all the industrial activities that we do as humans. Used to be a really big problem because there used to not be such curbs on emissions and lead exposure in general. And so companies would just pump out lead from their factories. They would put lead in gasoline, which would stop engine pinging, but also led to a lot more lead in the air. And so back in the 70s and the 60s and 50s, there was just a ton of atmospheric lead kind of sitting around ambient, especially in urban centers, but really just all around the world.
You go to the gas station and it's always been unleaded.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was actually ever a leaded.
Right. I was always wondering about that myself. And with this research, I finally pieced it together. And it
there
was actually
there
kind of like an aha moment. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Okay. So they made all these changes. Was that as a result of the, like they did all these Clean Air Acts back in the 70s? Were these changes, did that make significant changes into the amount of lead or atmospheric lead that we're breathing in and soaking in, I guess, to our bodies?
Yeah. I think it's one of the most dramatically effective public health initiatives that has been done in recent memory. Because if you just look, the CDC tracks the amount of lead in children's blood. So they just take these surveys every few years and they'll just measure a randomly selected sample of kids and they'll say, okay, how much lead do you have in your blood? And back in the 70s and the 60s, the average person had 13 micrograms per deciliter of lead in their blood. The current cutoff for clinical attention, so the current amount where if you have more than that in your bloodstream, that we're like, okay, we're going to monitor this, we're going to get you to a doctor, is 5. So the average person had more than double the current clinical amount. The average person nowadays only has around 0.8 micrograms per deciliter of lead in their blood, but it's been a dramatic decrease, thankfully, because of the Clean Air Act. And so there's still some lead production, but it's much, much less. And a big reason for this reduction of lead in people's blood is that they just got the lead out of gasoline. And that was a real big problem for many years.
Why should we be concerned about the amount of lead in our blood?
Yeah. One of the fun things that I've been doing as I'm learning more and more about lead exposure in different fields is to try to find some place where lead isn't having a negative effect. Because at the start, back in the 1950s, there were some researchers who were looking at lead poisoning. So if you have a really high amount of lead in your blood, oh, that's not good for your intelligence. It's not good for your developing body, like the way your brain grows, the way your bones are structured. It's not good for basically anything. And then they started looking at these researchers. Well, what if you don't have a huge amount of lead in your blood? What if you only have like a little amount of lead? And they kept looking and they found negative effects on intelligence. They found that people who were exposed to more lead tended to be delinquent and commit crimes more frequently. And then they're like, okay, well, this isn't good at all either. Maybe there's a safe low amount of lead. It turns out, no, they can't find a safe low amount either. It seems like any amount of lead that you have in your blood is worse than no lead. You know, with a lot of toxins, it's like your body can handle it sometimes until there's like a critical amount. Not with this. So it's really just decades and decades of research. And I'm thinking some of these researchers are just like, is it really that bad? And then they find more and more bad things.
Jeez. Okay. So your research found a link between this and your personality later in life. Tell us a little about that research.
Yeah. So I think this is an extension of those past studies where they used to look at high levels of lead, clinical problems. And then they looked at low levels of lead and clinical problems. And now what we're starting to look at, or at least in this study I looked at, low levels of lead exposure and problems that go beyond clinical problems. They just affect who you are as a person. And so we've known for a long time that people who are exposed to lead, you know, grow up to have these behavioral issues. But what if you just have a little bit of lead exposure and that makes you a little bit more frustrated or a little bit more angry or a little bit more anxious in everyday life? It doesn't have to be this clinical problem that derails your whole life, but it could be something that makes you just a little bit less mature in your personality. Unfortunately, that's what we found. We found that across a bunch of different personality traits, so we looked at the big five personality traits, which is like the common model that most researchers use nowadays. And the big five is a really good way of looking at personality because it splits up all of the different ways that people are unique from one another into five big clumps. So you've got extroversion. That doesn't really seem to be associated with lead exposure. We thought that people who were exposed to higher levels of lead would grow up to be less agreeable, so less warm, less friendly, less trustworthy. That we found. We found that people who grew up with high levels of atmospheric lead tended to be less conscientious. So conscientiousness is a really big mouthful of a word, but people who are more conscientious tend to be more proactive and risk averse and able to navigate their lives in a more organized and productive way. The people who were exposed to lead were less conscientious. And then we were looking at neuroticism. Neuroticism is basically the trait with all the bad stuff in it. So people who are more neurotic tend to be more anxious and depressed and emotionally volatile. And in some of our analyses, but not all of them, we found that people who were exposed to more lead as children grew up to be more neurotic. So a huge arena of different psychological effects, none of them were positive.
Wow. So how did you narrow this down to lead versus other elements, other outside items that could be potentially affecting the personality?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You can imagine that as we go through our lives, a ton of different things are affecting our personality traits. Mm-hmm. And there's been some research more and more in like the environmental realm on just how like particulate matter, like in the lungs, affects us. And there hasn't really been much personality research into this. So the intersection of the environment and personality traits hasn't really been explored. But it's got me scared for things that people haven't researched, like the effect of all the wildfires out in California. Mm. Like what happens when people are breathing in that smoke all the time? I mean, it certainly is going to have effects on the lungs, but it might also have some more psychological effects. We don't really know. Thankfully, with lead, people know it's a psychological problem causer. And so we were pretty able to hone in on that and think that, you know, maybe if something's going to affect personality, it's probably going to be lead exposure.
And your comment about the smoke, you know, we just did a show a couple of weeks ago on wildfire and the smoke, and we didn't really get into the psychological factors of it, but being in California and being around the smoke, it's depressing to wake up to an orange sky and to see the smoke and you can't do the things that you normally want to do. And is that just the fact that I'm seeing this and it's like now, okay, well, I got to be inside all day? Or is it the actual, you know, like smoke that's causing issues? Like, we don't know. Like, they don't even, they haven't even figured out if what that's doing to our bodies, let alone our mind. It's pretty crazy.
Some of the scary things with smoke and with lead exposure and all these things is that it's not, I mean, you can obviously see when there's a problem because someone has a really high level of exposure and then all of a sudden they can't breathe, right? But it's hard to see and hard to study the way in which a little bit more smoke inhalation or a little bit more lead exposure might have a small effect, but on millions of people. And I think that's the scary part of the research that we did on lead exposure is we didn't find these big effects, but we know that millions upon millions of people were exposed to high levels of atmospheric lead because if you live somewhere where cars were, you're going to have lead in the air and lead would get into your bloodstream. And so unfortunately, the conclusion is that, well, it might not be something that you can immediately notice and certainly not something that you would pick up in an individual person unless they had like really severe lead poisoning. But it might have contributed to an unhappier, more anxious, less organized society as a whole simply because of, this is kind of crazy to think about, just breathing in different particles and them getting into your blood.
Wow. This is an odd question, but so the Clean Air Act, we'll mark that as 1970.
Yeah.
The before and after. So because there's less lead in our bodies, are people going to be, because of that act, a little bit more agreeable, a little less of these other issues because of that act? Do you think that that, you know, made a difference?
So one of the my favorite parts of this analysis is all hinges on this very, to me, a little bit weird way in which they outlawed the lead from gasoline. It wasn't like individual jurisdictions or states said, all right, no more leaded gasoline here. Because what happened was they asked the companies to cap their lead in their gas. So something like Exxon, they could have this year, 90% of their lead or gas could have lead. And the next year, 85%.
Yeah, so it was a gradual decrease.
And so it's a gradual decrease. And the way that oil pipelines worked and gasoline sales, I don't really know too much about this. But there's some economists who have found that it was pretty much randomly phased out. That, like, just for whatever reason, the Portland, Maine would have less lead in the gasoline maybe a year before somewhere in Alabama would, simply because of just supply chains. And so one of the interesting things about the study is we could look at when an individual county started dropping in lead levels, did we see a shift in personality in the people born before versus after? And so it was pretty cool. We found that people born after the lead started to let up in the atmosphere, they had those more mature personalities. So they were more conscientious, more agreeable. And in these analyses, they were less neurotic. And so that kind of gives us some evidence, some more causal evidence too, about the effect of lead exposure. I think doubling back a little bit, one of the ways in which we figure out that something causes something else is through experiments. And the great thing about experiments is you randomly select who gets the exposure and who doesn't. But with lead, it's super unethical to say, all right, well, this kid's going to get exposed to a lot of lead and this kid isn't. So we have to use these environmental and natural experiments to figure out how lead affects us. We can't just go into a lab and, you know, feed a kid some lead.
Right.
So figuring out if lead actually causes these things or if it's just a miasma of, you know, more industrial areas have more lead and lower SES, that's kind of a hard nut to crack. And I think because they phased out the lead in different places at different times, that really allows us to make some sort of experiment out of the world.
Right. That's really interesting. And I like that you used that 1970 act as kind of a marker to see where things were. This is awesome. Okay. We've got more to discuss here. And also, you know, what about lead in the water? We'll talk about that too. And we'll do that right after this. We'll take a short break. If you enjoy history, maybe you're just feeling a little nostalgic, or you wonder who's having a birthday today, or maybe you need a reason to celebrate. Well, we've got the perfect podcast for you. It is called This Is Today. And each and every day, we talk about the historic events, celebrity birthdays. We also talk about whatever is going on today. There's always something to celebrate when you listen to This Is Today. And at just 10 minutes each day, you can make it a daily habit. You can even add it to your Alexa Flash briefing. Click the link in the description or just search in your favorite podcast app for This Is Today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing to Learning More. We're talking about atmospheric lead and how that impacts, well, your life, your personality. I'm talking with Ted Schwabe. He is a postdoctoral researcher in psychology at the University of Texas at Austin. Okay, so Ted, we're all familiar. Now we've learned now about atmospheric lead. What about lead in the pipes, lead in the water? Does that, I mean, it's something that we're actually, you know, ingesting. Is that actually worse for people than atmospheric, or kind of where does that land, just so we can kind of understand the atmospheric lead versus the lead in the water?
Yeah. I mean, in modern times, it's certainly way more of a problem to have lead in the water, lead from pipes, and also lead in soil is a big issue. Mm. It's something that people don't think about very much, but in industrial areas where there was a lot of lead pollution in terms of smoke, it would settle and get into the soil. And I think the soil and the water are the two sources that are the scariest because those are kind of sticky sources, if that makes sense. You know, you eventually have to replace the pipes. Thankfully, most of the lead has dissipated from the atmosphere. And so those really I mean, lead pipes are still a major problem, but not in, in more recently constructed areas. So if your house was built past 1970, generally you don't really have to worry about lead pipes. And so those issues are gradually getting fixed. But there's areas, huge areas, that used to have all these factories. I'm thinking of Pennsylvania. I was out there in Pittsburgh. And there's just a ton of relics of this industrial past. You know, you'll have a factory that's long out of commission, and then next door to it, you'll have some elementary school. And so those kids are going to be exposed to lead in the soil that's a remnant of the industrial past. And one of the major issues here is that Black children are twice as likely as white children to have high levels of lead in their blood. So that 5 micrograms per deciliter number I cited earlier, it's really affecting communities of color more. It's affecting people who are our most vulnerable citizens. And it's also no longer affecting people equitably. And so what we need to do is get rid of lead, not just because it's horrible, but get rid of lead because it's disproportionately affecting the people who need the most help in our society.
Right. Well, you also think about lead-based paint. You think about like former military bases. I read something about a military base that it wasn't a problem with the chemicals that were on the base, but it was the lead-based paint that they were using to, you know, paint the buildings and all of that. They had to actually dig up the top layer of soil and have it removed before they could build houses on that property. And guess what they built there? Affordable housing.
Huh.
Like, that's another potential issue as well, where some of those are being turned into something different, which could still have a higher lead exposure.
It gets back to this crazy idea to me that I just cannot get over, that literally eating a paint chip, you wouldn't think that would affect your brain at all, or affect your mind, or how you would think, or much less affect you later on in your life. But if you're a kid and you're, you know, eating this quite delicious, also, I've heard that lead is very tasty. You know, the Romans used to season their food with lead acetate.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
There's some fun theories about how the downfall of the Roman Empire comes from them just like having lead in their aqueducts, lead on their food, lead everywhere.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy.
It's a fun world.
I did not know that one.
Of lead research.
that's crazy. So, okay, we're not seasoning our food with it. We're not having it in our buildings anymore. We may have been exposed to it as a child. Mm-hmm. If these things have happened and we have that exposure, is there anything that people can do after they've already had this exposure and after these problems have already kind of happened?
One of the nice things about personality is that it's not set like plaster. People's personalities change throughout their whole lifespans. And so thankfully, this effect that we found of lead exposure at low levels was a small effect. So it's not something that you would necessarily notice in your day-to-day life, but it could be something that, you know, you get into a couple more arguments every year, or you forget something. The effects might be small, but really add up on a societal level. A nice thing about personality malleability, though, is things like therapy can be absolutely wonderful. I mean, we see huge effects of therapy on people becoming less neurotic and more agreeable, if that's what they so choose to work on, you know, if they're working on hostility and interpersonal communication. And so perhaps, you know, some biological processes made you temperamentally a little bit less stable. But there's a wonderful way that humans can change their identity, learn strategies, and come out as pretty great products, even if they've been through some trauma.
The personality test that you used for this, we're going to link to that in the podcast description. So that's, if you want to take that same personality test, you can. I love taking these personality tests, so I'll definitely do it too. Why is the type of research that you're working on, and I'll start this question by saying I totally appreciate this and I enjoyed reading it, but why is this important to do, this type of research?
I think our personalities are something we bring with us everywhere. They shape who we are. Your personality, there's thousands of words in the dictionary that describe how people are different from one another. It's super important. And so our personalities affect, you know, how successful we are in work and in love and how long we live. They affect everything, really. And so I think that by studying what affects our personality, we really can get into these basic questions of what makes us humans, what makes some people more gregarious and some people more quiet. And thankfully, as people get older, they tend to get more and more mature in their personality traits. But it seems like some things like lead exposure might stunt that maturation. Other things like, you know, going to therapy might accelerate that maturation. And I think by looking at all these factors in tandem, we really start to understand this very human question of people. What makes us the people we are?
I hope this isn't the end of the research here. What do you plan to do next with this?
Yeah, so I just started a postdoctoral appointment. So I finished up my PhD. The lead study was one of the last ones I did out there at University of California, Davis. Thank you. It's fun. I get to put like doctor on those generic mailing forms that don't actually matter and kind of come to me as a fan. But I'm like, hey.
Hey, you did a lot of work to check that box.
Yeah, literally checking a box. Yeah. And so what I'm working on now is more the genetic side of personality. So if you look at twins, you can see that personality is heritable. People who share a lot of genes because they're identical twins, well, they tend to have similar personalities as well. And so by looking at the way in which genetics shapes our personality, I can kind of get at the other side of the coin. So there's the environment and there's genes, and together they kind of play with each other and intertwine to form us.
Are you secretly hoping that there's twins that were separated in different completely areas with different exposure to different bits of the environment?
I mean, that would be the best way to figure out what lead is causing. If you figure out that these people have the same exact genes, but one person, you know, grew up next to a factory and the other person grew up in this rural farm thousands of miles away from any industrial anything, you're like, well, maybe that could be an effect.
All right. Well, if there's a twin that meets that.
Yeah. It'll be a sample of one twin pair.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about how, as a society, should we like address this issue? How do we, knowing now that any lead in our body is bad, what can we do as a society to hopefully we see these levels go down?
Step one, which thankfully the Biden administration is starting to take action on with the big infrastructure bill, is getting rid of lead pipes. So now more and more towns, the new houses being built in them don't have any lead, but there's these water mains that go right from, I don't really know too much about this, the water processing facility or whatever. And if the water is traveling through those leaded pipes and then getting diverted to even newly built houses, well, you're going to have some lead in that water. And so one of the things that I have started doing is, turns out Brita filters actually can filter out lead, which is nice.
Really?
So when I was out in Pittsburgh, I wasn't entirely sure if all the lead was getting removed from my water. And so I was just using a Brita filter for my drinking water, which is an individual level solution. But the societal level solution is first and foremost, replace the lead pipes, even if it costs tens of millions of dollars. Researchers have estimated the current cost of lead exposure to U.S. society is about $1.2 trillion.
Wow.
With the economic impacts of just increased crime, you know, people not living as long. And this doesn't even price in the personality problems that we're starting to realize are an issue. And so even if, as long as it costs less than $1.2 trillion, which it will, doing anything you can to remove the leaded topsoil, lead from pipes, those are the big issues.
Gotcha. And then just as an individual, you mentioned maybe filtering our water. Is there, like, should we be testing our water as well?
And so this is just something I've done the places that I've lived, but you can kind of Google if you have some sort of major metropolitan area that you live in, and you can figure out what the issues are with lead, or even sometimes look at the amount to which local children have lead in their blood. And so what's nice now in Austin, they don't really have any leaded pipes, which is great. So I'm not too worried about that, but I think interested consumers of things like water and taking showers, which is everybody, can go on and see if there's likely to be lead in their water if you just go online somewhere.
Okay, well, that's cheaper than a test.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm sure you could get a test if you were really worried, or like you lived in some old Victorian mansion where you're like, I don't know, I might be completely just drinking metal out here, but...
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, or the paint or whatever. There's tests for all these things out there that you can get to you know, just double check. We actually, when we bought our home, we did that. We did a couple of different you know, types of tests just to make sure, because who knows? You know, and we're buying a home that was built in the, you know, 60s. So it could be issues.
Right.
We just found electrical problems, which also you don't want. Well, okay. So Dr. Ted Schwabe. See, I added the doctor.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You get that at the end. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'd love to have you come back and talk personality types and things like that.
It'd be my treat. I feel like everyone, even as a personality psychologist, I love taking personality questionnaires. And so they're all different from one another. It's kind of confusing what they all mean. Everyone knows about the Myers-Briggs. Is that good? Is that bad? I'd love to talk about that.
Thank you so much for joining me today and helping us learn more about atmospheric lead pollution and personality types.
Thank you, Ross.
And thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. I invite you to also check out our daily podcast if you like nostalgia or history, learning about something to celebrate today. You can check out This Is Today. There's a link to it in the podcast description. And we would love to have your feedback on Learning More. So please do write a review, give us some stars on whichever app you're listening to. Thanks for listening. I'm Russ, and I'll talk to you next time.